You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
We came very close to a catastrophic breakdown of our democratic accountability.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
Right now, we're kind of stuck in this cycle where every summer we're hearing another story about a big fire and a town burning down.
It's still extremely difficult to hold government agencies accountable for abuses that take place in the name of national security.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
The January 6th House Committee completed its eighth and final scheduled hearing this past Thursday evening, adding fresh revelations about the attack on the nation's capital that followed the 2020 election. But with more evidence coming in and more witnesses agreeing to testify, committee members say their investigation is far from over.
Doors have opened, new subpoenas have been issued, and the dam has begun to break.
Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Keith Menconi. Today on the program, we'll reflect on what those committee hearings have turned up and also discuss what the fallout could be.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate.
First up, though, we're going to hear from someone who's been helping to lead these proceedings all along. That would be Congressperson Zoe Lofgren, who represents much of the South Bay and is a member of the January 6th committee. I spoke with her following Thursday's hearing. Congressperson Zoe Lofgren, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So these series of hearings ended this past Thursday with a session that focused largely on the roughly 3 hours of time between Donald Trump's Stop the Steal speech and when he finally called his supporters to go home. That hearing adds on to seven others spread out over the past several weeks, during which you and your colleagues presented the findings of your investigation, an investigation that we should say drew on the testimony of more than 1,000 witnesses. So and all of this, of course, zeroing in on exactly how the events of January 6th unfolded. Take it all together, and it is an awful lot of material for, you know, us average Americans to sift through. What are you hoping, after all that, will actually stick?
Well, you know, it is a lot of information, and actually there is a lot of evidence that we were unable to roll out just because of the time constraints of a hearing. I mean, you can't have a 10-hour hearing. We may be releasing key elements, outside of the hearing process, just so people can see some of the material that helped us reach conclusions. For example, it's very clear that the intent always was walk to the Capitol from the rally. And we have a variety of pieces of information about that. One of the pieces of information that got left on the cutting room table was Rudy Giuliani telling Cassie Hutchinson, as he was being walked out of the White House on January 2nd, I think close to the exact words, it's going to be great. January 6th is going to be great. We're going to go to the Capitol. And of course, we had some documents in prior hearings about how there wasn't a permit to go march, and they switched a permit on the grounds of the Capitol for after the inauguration to the 6th, when after the president called the mob to Washington, be there, it'll be wild. The president directed this on the day itself. It's very clear from multiple sources of both testimony and documents that he knew the mob was armed, and he directed them to the Capitol anyhow.
So obviously this is a very large project that you and your colleagues on the committee have undertaken. So many people involved in this, so many different questions to find answers to. And there are a lot of outcomes that you might be pushing towards. I'm kind of curious to you, what sorts of outcomes are you hoping for most? I mean, obviously there's the outcome of informing the American public, and based on the viewing numbers, it seems like definitely a lot of work has been done there. Then there's also what a lot of people are talking about, and I know you've been asked about this many times, is the question of how this might inform the Justice Department and possible criminal charges. And also we've seen some movement in the area of further legislation that might protect against similar events. What, in your mind, are the most important sorts of outcomes that you would hope to see?
Well, we have an assignment. You know, there was a resolution that created the committee, and the assignment was to find out everything there was to be found about the events on January 6th and the days leading up to it. So that's a job we are trying to accomplish, and then also to recommend legislative changes. As the truth rolls out, as we find things, we're going to make it known to the American people, and the Attorney General has indicated that they're also watching. So if this is news to them, hopefully that will be useful to them as they do their job. We're looking at possible legislative changes. As Dr. John Eastman himself said, the scheme that he was recommending to President Trump, that the president was following,
Trump's lawyer, yeah.
Right, violated the Electoral Count Act. So I guess, you know, the fact that it violated the law doesn't call out for a change in the law, except we're looking at to make it less easy for wrongdoers to violate the law. And Liz Cheney and I have been working on that. And I think we're just about done with a bipartisan proposal to tighten it up and make it a lot harder for people who want to violate the law to do that. We're taking a look at certain other things. We know that there was a real failure in terms of intelligence. And the question is that law or is that something else? You know, the Secret Service knew, at least on the morning of the 6th, that an armed mob was heading to the Capitol. But they didn't, it looks like, they didn't alert the Capitol Police to that. And the question is, why did that happen? There were other failures. In terms of deploying the National Guard in the case of a large emergency such as this. I think we need to take a look at the governance of the Capitol Police. Right now, the governing board is a sergeant at arms of the House, the Senate, and weirdly enough, the architect of the Capitol. There's no real accountability to the members of Congress, to the House or the Senate. It's very indirect. And I'm not sure that those agencies at the department even yet is as managed as well as it should be. Certainly, the officers just performed heroically. I've met so many of them who held off the mob. As you could see from Thursday night's events, we came within minutes of something much more dire. And those minutes were given to us with the blood and the injury of the Capitol Police officers who held the mob at bay for a while.
Yeah. Speaking once again to Congressperson Zoe Lofgren, a member of the January 6th House Committee, speaking with her just days after the final scheduled committee meeting. Of course, though, you and your colleagues have left the door open to holding more meetings. It seems like investigations are ongoing. What can you tell us about where your investigation may go next and what future committee meetings may bring to light?
Well, we meet all the time.
I suppose I meant hearings.
Yeah, but in terms of hearings, we did indicate there will be further public reports come September. We have a lot of witnesses we're still interviewing. And it's interesting when you have a hearing, then all of a sudden people who have not come forward all of a sudden do. So that is a phenomena that we're experiencing. And I will say also, we have a very large number of documents that have just recently come into our possession and more coming in that may have very important relevance to this, and we have to go through that and make sure we've got the full story. So we have to do an interim report by the fall. We'll also be working putting that together, at least the draft, over the summer. But the terms of the resolution that established the committee, when a final report is filed, the committee is dissolved. And I think there's some feeling among us all that to dissolve the committee in September would be a mistake, especially since people are still coming forward with information. So if we have an interim report, those witnesses would still be free to come in after September.
Now, when it comes to the question of possible indictments, possible actions from the Department of Justice, I know that you've said in past interviews that the committee doesn't have a formal role in that process. Has there been any talk of sending over recommendations to the Department of Justice on that front?
We haven't had a full discussion on that yet. The point is that when it comes to a referral for criminal contempt, there's an actual statute that, you know, lays out how the Congress does that. That statutory authority doesn't exist for, you know, other crimes. Now, that hasn't stopped the Congress over the years from sending things publicly or privately to the Department of Justice saying, you know, we're referring this for criminal prosecution. I've been told that those letters are used as wallpaper in some of the offices over at the DOJ. So, you know, whether or not that has an impact, who knows? But we will have a discussion. And the fact that there, you know, it may or may not be paid attention to, you know, shouldn't be the only factor in whether we decide to align what we've found and send over to DOJ a recommendation. And we may very well do that.
How much did that question of legal culpability play into your decisions as to what to investigate, what to present to the American public? I mean, was there half an eye towards establishing a legal case for indictment for crimes that were committed on January 6th?
Now, that has not been the guiding focus of this. As I said, the authorizing resolution, you know, tells us to find out everything we can about the day and the events leading up to the day. When we started, a lot of people said, well, this was a demonstration that got out of hand. Clearly, that's not the case. This was planned. The violence was planned. It was planned for a reason, to disrupt the electoral count and to overturn the election. You know, whether that's a crime, there are statutes that, you know, that could violate, but that's what happened. And it's the first time I'm aware of since the Civil War that we've had, you know, violence to overturn the government. And that's significant, I think, for the American people to understand and hopefully renew their passion for our democratic system. You know, it's not a given that we get to have a democratic republic. It's up to us to defend it.
All right, we'll close with that then. Congressperson Zoe Lofgren, thanks so much for your time.
You bet.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth, your weekly deep dive into the events and trends shaping life in the Bay Area and beyond. I'm Keith Benconi. Today in the program, we're taking a closer look at the work of the January 6th House Committee, now that it's wrapped up a series of hearings seeking to answer questions about last year's attack on the Capitol. Some of the answers we've gotten have shocked the country, and some could potentially lead to criminal charges. To help us understand what to make of this flood of new revelations we've been getting, and what they could all amount to, we're going to welcome onto the program now Jamil Jaffer. He's the founder and executive director of the National Security Institute and assistant law professor at George Mason University, who served as an associate counsel for the administration of President George W. Bush. Jamil Jaffer, welcome to KCBS In Depth.
Thanks for having me, Keith.
So this committee has focused much of its energy on finding out exactly what role former President Trump played in the events of January 6th, you know, what he knew, what actions he took, what his intentions were. Probably that last one is going to be the most difficult to really nail down. But really, it's been just a flood of information since these hearings kicked off. To you, what are the key moments that you think stand out as the most informative?
Yeah. Well, Keith, you know, I think some of the most interesting and most important revelations that we've learned from the committee is that President Trump knew well ahead of time, and that people in the White House knew well ahead of time, that there was a significant potential threat of violence and of the events that happened that day actually playing out the way they did. In fact, we learned from a firsthand witness, Cassie Hutchinson, that when President Trump was at the Ellipse about to give that speech, that he knew that the folks out in the crowd that were in the Ellipse, that were near the Ellipse, were carrying weapons. He knew this because he saw the crowd in the Ellipse and wanted more people inside the Ellipse. And he was told by his Secret Service agents that they weren't able to come through the magnetometers, the metal detectors, because they were carrying weapons. And he said, you know what? Take those magnetometers down. I want those people in. They're my people. They're not here to hurt me. They're going to march on the Capitol. So he knew they had weapons. He knew they planned to march on the Capitol. And he knew they weren't there to hurt him. It raises the question, who were they there to hurt with those weapons? And then, of course, he went on stage and called for the march to the Capitol, saying, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to walk with you up there. Let's go to the Capitol. He ultimately didn't go, as we all know. But then what played out at the White House was even more troubling. We have a president for 187 minutes, over 3 hours, alone in the White House, in the dining room, aware that there's violence taking place, aware the Capitol is being attacked, watching it take place on live television and doing nothing. But not only doing nothing, knowing because his aides are coming in and saying, Mr. President, you must intervene. You've got to get involved. You've got to stop the violence, and refusing to do anything for nearly 3 hours. And then only at the 11th hour towards the end, as the police are starting to regain control, does he go on television and issue a taped statement that, you know, not only, it did call at some level for peace, coddled the protesters, coddled the people who conducted the insurrection, saying, you know, we love you. I understand where you're coming from. I understand why you did what you did, but now go home peacefully. And, you know, so what we have here is not just a president run amok, but a president who knew it was going to happen, who wanted it to happen, and who was trying to delay the proceedings so he could stay in power. It's deeply troubling. It should be deeply troubling. Not just for every American, but in particular for Republicans like myself, who watched this man go into power. Republicans in the House and the Senate, who, you know, even in the aftermath of this, criticized the president, attacked the president, like Kevin McCarthy, and in more recent days have pulled back that criticism.
And of course, the events of that day, January 6th, played out on live television. Much of what Trump had to say that day was served out on Twitter, or as you said, on television as well. So a lot of this we knew, the main bullet points of that day we knew, but what we've really been getting from these committee hearings is much more fine-grained detail of who said what when, who knew what when, and also we've been hearing from many administration aides their deep misgivings about how that day was developing. What does that add to our understanding of how to interpret that day and potentially what kinds of legal implications all those actions and decisions might have?
Yeah. You know, Keith, it's a really hard question on the legal front because the idea of the Justice Department considering charges, potentially criminal charges against a former sitting president raise the concern that by people on both sides of the aisle that the Justice Department might be being used for political purposes. In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct a proceeding, an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful. And we know the president had the intent to do exactly that. We know that because the president himself and his lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, called members of the Senate, asked them to slow it down. You know, we have a tape recording of Rudy Giuliani, who mistakenly left a message for Senator Tuberville on the wrong phone, that says exactly that. And this was all happening both during and after the riot and insurrection that took place at the Capitol. And of course, you have the president calling on the protesters to go up there knowing they're armed. So there are potential charges to be had. Whether they're actually brought and whether they're successfully prosecuted, Keith, I think is a very different question. I think it's very unlikely, in large part because what the Justice Department needs to be is as apolitical as possible. And when you go after a president in the context of an election contest, admittedly one that turned into an actual insurrection, you have real potential challenges and real concern that the Justice Department and the prosecution capability might be viewed as political.
Speaking once again to Jamil Jaffer, a law professor at George Mason University. He formerly served as an associate counsel for the administration of President George W. Bush, talking to him about the aftermath of these most recent January 6th House committee hearings, what we've learned, what they could lead to. And you're in the camp of the Justice Department likely won't bring an indictment in this case. I've been hearing both sides of that case over the past couple of days. Obviously, as you say, we have had this long-standing norm in the U.S. You don't want the current administration going back and harassing legally the prior administration. That's, there's good reasons why the Justice Department might be reluctant to take that step. But many Americans, after seeing all of these details of the past several months, feel like there's just got to be some consequence for all the things that happened, all the decisions that were made. How can the Justice Department weigh that general sense that many Americans have right now that, you know, there needs to be some reckoning for all this?
Well, you know, Keith, you're exactly right. I mean, you count me amongst those Americans that feels that way. I mean, I think the events of January 6th were appalling. I think the president's role in it is deeply troubling and potentially very likely criminal. And the Justice Department probably should bring charges. Whether they will or not, though, is a different question. And I do think that, you know, as the Justice Department thinks about it, you know, there are multiple remedies under our law when you have a president who behaves badly and, in this case, actually stokes an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. And the primary methodology is not criminal prosecution. The primary methodology is impeachment and removal from office. And, of course, we know that the president was brought up on charges of impeachment in this specific context as a result of what happened on January 6th. Of course, the impeachment proceedings, which could have taken place in the immediate aftermath before he left office, were not kicked off by Speaker Pelosi until after he left office. I think that was a mistake. I called it a mistake at the time. I think it remains a mistake. And ultimately, the president was not convicted, in part because many members of the Senate said, well, he's not in office anymore. What difference does it make? And of course, it makes all the difference in the world, Keith, because what happened that day on January 6th was almost completely unprecedented. It's nothing I've ever even heard of in our history. And it's nothing I can even imagine having worked in the Bush administration's White House. And yet, here we are. And the really troubling thing, of course, Keith, and I think this is part of what you saw in the hearings, is, you know, you have some Republican members like Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney who have been, have been out there talking about the problems that the president has caused and the real threat that he posed to the Republic. And they're clearly concerned that he might run for office again, as are obviously all the Democrats in Congress. And I think that's a very real concern. Now, had Congress done its job and conducted impeachment proceedings in the immediate aftermath of the January 6th insurrection and taken a vote, it's very possible that he would have been impeached and may have been barred from holding office. And so, you know, I think, you know, hindsight's 20/20, Keith, but I think the possibility of the Justice Department bringing charges, as much as I might think they're the right charges to bring, I think is pretty, pretty low.
Just to speak to another reason why the Justice Department may be reluctant, I mean, a lot of these charges that are under consideration require some understanding of former President Trump's intent. And he is a famously mercurial, hard to pin down figure. Understanding what's going through his head at any given moment is a difficult task. How far do you think, given the evidence that has been made public, we've come towards answering the question of, did he intend to send that crowd of people to the Capitol for an attack versus another plausible reading of that situation, which was simply he was playing off the crowd and events took a life of their own and got carried away?
You know, Keith, I've thought a lot about this, and I think that the evidence that we've seen that's now been brought out by the committee of what the president knew, when he knew it, what he did after he knew those facts, like he knew the crowd, the audience out there that wasn't inside the magnetometers at the Ellipse was armed. They couldn't get in because they were armed. He still called on them to march to the Capitol. He then went back to the White House, watched the chaos, watched the violence at the Capitol on television, let it go on for 3 hours. And then at the end of all of it, even after the Congress had voted and had endorsed the election of Joe Biden, the president, as he was you know, talk about making his next statement, as we saw in the uncut footage, couldn't bring himself and actually said, I don't want to say the election is over. So I think when you take all these things together, look, it's not a slam dunk case by any stretch of the imagination, Keith. But I mean, I think if you had a jury of 12 honest Americans, I mean, I think it's hard to believe that Donald Trump didn't know what he was doing, didn't intend exactly what happened to happen, because he wanted to show the frustration and the anger. He wanted to slow down the proceedings. He actually wanted to stop the proceedings, and was hopeful that in fact the vice president would ignore the law and do his bidding. Of course, Mike Pence was a hero in that moment and didn't ignore the law, follow the law, as did all those other members of Congress who reconvened in the aftermath of the Capitol being attacked, and did their work and did the work of the American people.
Well, certainly, there are a lot of moving parts to this, a political dimension, a legal dimension. I suppose to close out, the committee has, as we've said, closed out its final scheduled hearing, but they've left the door open to further hearings down the road. It seems like an investigation into more fact finding is still afoot. Certainly a lot more that we could learn. To close this out, what are you hoping the future work of this committee leads to? What questions are you still hoping to hear answered? What could still be accomplished?
Well, you know, it's a good question. We don't know what else the committee has. It's clear from yesterday's hearing that Representative Cheney, who largely chaired the hearing, she's the vice chair of the committee, but the chair, Benny Thompson, was largely out of pocket because he was remote. He got COVID. She clearly intimated that they're getting more new testimony, more new information they think is going to be relevant, including, as you know, they've subpoenaed some Secret Service records about what was taking place that day. There are some allegations that Cassidy Hutchinson made that she heard third hand about the president getting in a pretty aggressive confrontation with his Secret Service agents when they refused to take him to the Capitol. And so I think they're trying to ferret out some of that. And I think a lot of that goes to the atmospherics around the president's behavior that day and more generally. And so I think we may see more evidence on that front. Whether we'll see any major smoking guns or not is hard to know. But certainly more work to be done from the committee. And I think we will see more hearings coming in September as we head towards the by-elections or the congressional elections in November this year.
Yeah, well, a lot more to come. But thank you for helping us get our bearings for where we are at right now. We have been speaking to Jamil Jaffer, once again, founder and executive director at the National Security Institute, also assistant law professor at George Mason University, once served as an associate counsel for the administration of President George W. Bush. Jamil Jaffer, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Keith.
And thank you all for listening for KCBS and In Depth. Stay safe, be well. We'll see you next week.
Been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.